I feel like well digging's more manly though.
Right? It is. I mean, it's a manly job though. I mean, look at my hand, you know. It's,
dude, yeah. That's show the camera that real quick. What is that?
Which camera? That one.
Yeah, there you go. What do you got going on there? You're missing three fingers? Or is it two?
It's basically, can you show there? It's about three.
About three.
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen?
It all happened down in Oklahoma. Where every great story starts.
Damn, Oklahoma.
Right? I know.
Welcome to Careers Over Beers podcast, folks. My name is Jesse Krause, obviously, the podcast host. And today I got Jared Stroot. Tell us about yourself.
Oh, I've had a rough life, but came out ahead drilling water wells for a living. I started out working there, and now I own the company.
Now you own the company.
I do.
Holy shit, man.
I know, right?
How did that all happen?
Oh, it's just the right place at the right time, really. We were drilling a well for the guy that I used to work for, my brother and I, and he just was kind of getting tired of getting burned out on it, I guess you could say. And he said, well, I think I'm about ready to be done with this. How about in 5 years you guys take over? And I was going to college up at Hutch at the time to be a firefighter full time, and I was like, one plus two carry the three. Yeah, that's better math to own my own company.
Yeah, that math adds up. Yeah.
So yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
Just decided to hell with it and went full on, full regalia, and we've had it about 4.5 years now, and we've grown the company and still growing and
nice,
aggressively trying to be the best we can every day for the customers so they get the best quality we can give. I mean, I can give you the full on, you know,
that's what you want to be,
clean
though.
Reliable water from the bottom of the well to the bottom of your glass. That's what we deliver.
What about the bottom of this glass?
Hey, I'll that's good to me.
So what are we drinking here, first of all? What's your favorite? What's your drink of choice?
I mean, that's not quite, but what we made work. I mean,
we'll make it work.
I'm non-partial to either, really.
These are actually both my whiskeys quality. Here, so I was like, let's just use those. Why not?
Good quality.
And we got a full boot of ice. Look at that shit.
Yeah.
So you wanted to start it off with a shot.
And the Red Bull, chase it down with.
You wanted to start it off with a shot.
Well, we can do that.
Well, I think you wanted to, though, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do it. What is this one? Did you pour these?
I think it was the Horse Soldier.
Horse Soldier.
Yeah, this is to Careers Over.
That is a fine bourbon.
Careers Over Bourbon.
Careers Over Bourbon. Here we go. Cheers, sir.
Woo! You'll be all right.
Oh, man, it feels good. I can feel it going down my esophagus right now.
The burn is good.
It is a good
burn.
Yeah, makes you feel alive, like a man.
Yes, sir.
Let's mix up some drinks.
Yeah.
So we're doing some Red Bulls here?
Yeah, it sounded appeasing.
It did?
You pick.
No, you pick. You want to go with the Horse Soldier?
We already had the Horse Soldier. Let's
do this one then. This is a good bourbon here. A cousin of mine actually brought this on for me. Shout out to Joe Wendell.
Yeah.
He brought me the Old Forester 1910. It's a good pour.
Good job, Joe.
It'll make you a man.
Put hair on your chest.
What do you think? Is that good?
Oh, I don't know. You tell me. Dude. You're the bartender right
now.
Yeah,
but you're the guest, man. I'm appeasing you right now.
Oh, you're doing a mighty fine job.
Do you normally drink bourbon with whiskey like this?
Oh, bourbon with whiskey?
No, sorry. Bourbon with Red Bull.
Oh, if I'm starting to get a little tired or something, I'll mix in a little Red Bull at the time. Most of the time, it's a 7. I like
seven.
A good clear
7 and 7?
Crown or Pendleton.
Or Crown, yeah.
I'm partial to Pendleton.
7-Up's a good mixer, man.
It
People
is.
Sleep on it sometimes when they're big whiskey drinkers.
I mean, it may be a little sweet, but, you know, I'm kind of a sweet guy.
Are
so.
You? You are a sweetheart, aren't you?
What are you doing under this table?
I'm just trying to play with your feet. I hope you don't mind. Right. I do it with every guest. All right, let's get back into well digging.
Yeah, well drilling, not well
drilling.
Digging. Well drilling.
So you're not digging.
There is
wells.
A difference.
Is there?
There is a difference.
Tell me the difference.
So the difference is well digging, way back in the day before Grandpappy and you and I and everything, they used to set out, you know, when they made even Colwich like this, they would take a ring of stones and start digging a hole and keep stacking the stones. And as they dug the hole, the gravity would push the stones down. And they would just keep digging, and that would keep the ground from collapsing in.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
I didn't know that.
So they would dig and dig and dig until they hit water, and they'd go as deep as they could. And that's where, like, with, I think Greensburg, the deepest hand-dug well, that's how they did it.
How deep is it?
Oh, it's collapsed now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, thanks to the tornado.
Ah, damn naders.
Yeah, but that's how they used to do it. That's well digging. They would just dig it in a shovel and fill up a bucket. And
I guess I never really thought about that, because when you do see a well, like an old school well, there's stone all the way down.
Oh, it's big, yeah.
I never really put that together. Like, yeah. How did they do that?
That's how they did it. They would just, a couple unlucky
gravity
guys
would just push it down.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
And now well drilling is the rig is drilling. So for well drilling, think of, if you've ever done like a post hole, an automatic where, you know, it's the auger and such. It's basically kind of the same thing. There's a bit down there and the rods are just an extenuation of the Kelly, which does everything. But
the Kelly?
The Kelly.
What's the Kelly?
Kelly. The Kelly is the part of the rig that is there every time. So when I start out, when we get the rig all set up and everything, I'll hook the bit up to the Kelly, and the Kelly is just the rod that stays in the derrick, for lack of a better term, the best way to describe it. And think of the rods that come out of the rod box as we keep going deeper as just a extenuation of mm-hmm. So we drill down 20 feet and we'll clean the hole up, pick the Kelly up, break the bit off the Kelly, and we'll slap in a rod, and that's just a spacer, 20 feet spacer between the Kelly and the bit. So then we go down another 20 feet and just keep continuing it on and on down. Yeah. So that's where they come up. It's a rotary drilling. That's where well drilling, not well digging.
Not well digging.
Well drilling.
I feel like well digging's more manly, though.
Right? It is. I mean, it's a manly job, though. I mean, look at my hand, you know. It's,
dude, yeah. Show the camera that real quick. What is that?
Which camera? That one.
Yeah, there you go. What do you got going on there? You're missing three fingers? Or is it two?
It's basically, can you show there? It's about three.
About three.
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen?
It all happened down in Oklahoma, where every great story starts.
Damn, Oklahoma.
Right? I know. So we were drilling a well for this farmer who runs a lot of cattle, and he irrigates this grass for the cattle to eat on, so he can raise more cattle and less acreage. And we were drilling the well, and we went down there. See, we're based in Mays, so when we go down to Oklahoma, it's a full on. We stay down there, get everything done we can, and go on back home.
You make a whole work trip out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. We're gone. We're usually home every day, but in these sorts of circumstances, typically we're gone for a couple days, maybe. Mm-hmm. In this circumstance, we were drilling the well for the guy. We got down there that morning, drilled the first one, no problems, and we said, okay, well, let's move to this part of the field, because this guy's got a great big piece of land on the Arkansas River beneath Kaw. And he was trying to irrigate it all. So it was going to be multiple wells. And it was, you know, get it done as quick as you can so we can get back home. So we're down there the first day, drill the first one. And we go back to the hotel we were staying at and everything. And the next night, or the next morning, we come to the field. And it was a little breezy, a little too breezy for drilling. But, you know, you want to get back home. So we're in the field and we get the first rod down and we get started on it and make our depth, and then we come back up to put on a rod, like I said, to continue on to go mm-hmm. deeper. And on this style of rig, it's a special style. Not a lot of people in this area have that kind of rig, and everything is bigger. And when I say bigger, I mean it's drilling a 32-inch hole.
What's normal, though?
Around here, normal is like 11.
11 inches?
This is 32 inches going down in the ground. That's a big
hole. It's a big bastard.
That's a big old hole.
You could jump down that hole.
that's where it comes in.
Okay.
So it was a breezy day, like I said, and we made our first joint, and we broke the bit off, and on this style rig, again, it's completely different than what typically we see running around town. And it's got a weight involved in it to help keep it drilling a straight hole, which is about 2,000 pounds steel and concrete mixed. And so we broke the bit off, pulled the Kelly up, bolted on the weight, and we picked the weight up to pull the slip out, which is what holds the bit there while we undo the bolt so it doesn't fall down the hole.
So is the weight below or above the bit?
Above the bit.
Above it, okay.
So it would go the bit, and then there's some bolts there to hold it to the Kelly, so then whenever you break that joint, you put the slip in there so it doesn't fall down the hole, and then you swing in, pull the Kelly up out of the way, and then they swing in the bit, or the weight, and you bolt it on, that helps you track straight, and then you would lower it down and put on the Kelly, and then you keep going. It was a windy day, and we bolted on the weight, picked up the slip, and everything had shifted towards where I stand at typically.
Just shifted towards you, towards, like you're standing over the hole.
Because the hole, you got the hole, but there's this, it's a whole different style. It's a flow ditch is what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 6 feet wide, and there's like railroad ties running across there, and there's 2x12s. It's pretty crude, but it works. But it works.
And OSHA wasn't involved in this job.
No. OSHA who? And so we bolted on the weight, picked it up, and everything had shifted. Well, we didn't notice that. And as we went to lower the weight down to get down to get ready to bolt on the Kelly, the weight, the bit is, again, 32 inches. It caught on the board I was standing on. And so we were trying to figure out, because the weight in the bit went down, maybe 2-3 feet, and we were like, well, god dang, why is it not going down? Is the hole falling in on us? What's going on? And so on these rigs, we call it draw works, and it is basically, think of a crane. It's either all or none. When you pick up on the lever to pick up on everything, that's all it is. And the brake.
So there's no, like, it doesn't change its power level based on what you're doing.
No,
it's
as
like
soon as you
full
let go,
power as soon as you pull it.
Exactly. As soon as you let go of the lever, if you don't have your hand on the brake, putting pressure on the brake, that sucker's
falling. It's dropping.
That sucker's falling. So we picked it up, and he let off, the owner at the time, he let off of the pickup lever, and we both bent down to look under the table like, what the hell's going on? And that split second was all it took. And the board I was standing on snapped, started to shoot down that borehole. So I caught myself on the table, which is where, like, everything is at, where everything's turned, kind of like an oil rig.
So your body fell into the hole.
It was getting ready to fall in the hole.
It was getting ready to, but you caught...
I caught myself on the table, but that everything had shifted over. It was typically a safe spot to catch myself, where everything shifted over. That weight... that 3,000, 6,000 pounds came in a free fall about 2 feet and just bounced off that steel table. Well, it wasn't
right where your fingers
it
were.
Wasn't a safe space at that spot.
Oh man, holy shit.
So it bounced. I yanked my hand out of there and I'm jumping around, you know, shit. And
I think I stubbed my finger.
That's what I thought. That's honestly what I thought. I thought maybe, you know, I smashed my finger. That was it.
Yeah.
No.
Wait, no, they were gone.
I go like this, and I look, and I really start freaking out because I see these two fingers here hanging by the tendon.
Oh,
one
God.
Tendon. This one is smashed. Like if you took a sledgehammer and just waylaid on it.
It was flat.
It was flat.
Like a pancake.
Like, yeah. And so I was freaking out. We were freaking out, and the farmer was in the field yet, and the owner called the farmer, and he took me to the hospital.
Was there blood everywhere?
No, honestly, surprisingly, Jesse, I probably lost maybe, you know, that much blood. It was so much weight, it crushed everything instantly.
But the two were still hanging there.
By the tendon. It was basically like just a pop.
But you couldn't feel it or anything?
Feel nothing.
So you didn't feel any pain at all?
I mean, other than this finger right here that was actually...
smashed down?
Physically smashed. Yeah, I felt that one later. So the farmer came and got me, and I got in his car, and he started hauling me to the hospital. We were down kind of by Ponca City, And it's an hour and a half drive. He made it in an hour. God. He made it an hour in four-wheel drive, full four-wheel drive, hauling 70 mile an hour down the road. And I'll never forget it. We were sitting there, and I was freaking out, and I apologized to him. I was getting blood in his car. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He's like, shit, don't worry about
sorry,
it.
Sorry, I'm such a pain in the ass. I know, my fingers right? are hanging
yeah.
off.
Yeah, sorry to inconvenience you. So he goes, well, stick your fingers in my iced tea jar. He just stopped at the gas station that morning and got a cup of iced tea, and I stuck my hand in there. He's like, they can save it. They can save it. And we got to the hospital, and by the time they got to the hospital –
that's pretty redneck, you got to admit.
It was.
Stick your fingers in my tea jar.
It'll be all right.
It'll help it out.
So we get to the hospital, and they start doing everything, and I'm terrified of needles. And so I was more concerned about the IV going to my arm than my fingers laying in my palm. And so we get there, and everything goes on, and I go into surgery and everything.
You had to have known you were losing your fingers, though, when you were on the
no,
way.
No, I didn't know for
you
sure.
You didn't know?
I didn't know what was happening. My wife was still up here in Wichita, and so they called. My brother called her, and my wife and my father-in-law came down to the hospital. They finally got there that night. It took them till the end of the day to get me in for surgery because it wasn't an emergency. It was an emergency to me.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't an emergency.
It's a pretty big inconvenience for me.
Yeah.
So you're late. Your fingers are in your palm and smashed, and you're thinking to yourself, maybe.
I didn't know what was – I didn't know what to think.
I don't blame you.
I've never been in this situation
You're
before.
Probably kind of in shock, though, too.
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, were the fingers actually smashed themselves that were in your palm, or were they just hanging by a thread?
No, these two were hanging, just laying there.
But they look normal, though, other than that?
Other than that, honestly.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I could see it, though.
I mean, I could see my knuckle bones and everything. Yikes. But they were laying in my palm. And so they do the surgery and everything, and the lady was getting me ready for surgery, and she was like, well, I think we can save it. I think the doctor said he can save it and this and that, but you're going to have to go to Denver or Germany or somewhere because there's so much physical weight smashing it. It crushed everything. They're like, we can't do that here. And they said, we can't guarantee you'll have full, you know, range.
Right.
Otherwise, it'll just be, you know, and I was like, No, just take them off. Let's get this over.
It's pretty savage.
Yeah.
So just get rid of them.
Just get rid of them.
I ain't going to Germany.
Let's get on with
take them off.
Let's get on with my life.
We're doing it in Kansas, or you're cutting them off.
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So they did the surgery and everything, and I was out of work for probably 3 or 4 months and everything. It worked out. I mean, my only complaint is sometimes I have a hard time pulling the trigger when I shoot a gun, like a shotgun with high brass. But otherwise,
how do you pull the trigger?
With that finger right there.
With your...
Yep, so I'm holding on to the stock with my pinky and my thumb, and I pull the trigger with that finger.
Nature finds a way.
It does. And stubbornness. I'm very stubborn. And they said, you'll have to learn how to shoot left-handed. And I said, no, I'm right-handed. I'm going to do it this way.
No, so. I'm right-handed. I think you
I think you got it wrong. So
did you ever have, like, phantom finger feeling where you felt like they were still there?
Really? No. Everybody always asked me. And no, I haven't.
No?
The only thing that happens is these fingers get cold in the winter. And we're getting close
on the nub,
to the
on the tip
yep,
of it.
Yep. And see, these are all. That's.
So that hasn't hurt at all. To
they're all bones. I get calluses on the end of them and everything.
No shit.
Yeah, it's just an adaption. I've learned to.
It's just you now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just how you are.
It's part of me, and I've there's no sense in getting butthurt about it. It's just it is what it is. They're not gonna grow back. Even though I asked if I could have them. You know, in the jar to set on the
they didn't
the
give
mail.
Them to you?
No shit, no.
What?
I know. I was kind of upset about that.
That would be cool if they grew back.
I know.
I've heard of people that cut like the very tip off, like by
the fingernail,
and they will
back.
Grow back. Yeah.
Well, not me.
Not you. That'd be crazy if it did.
I was upset I didn't get to set them on my mantle.
I know. Normally, I thought that you could sign some kind of release form or whatever, and they give you your body part that you get cut off.
I would like, think so. And I asked them that, and they said, no, it's in the incinerator. Oh, okay. I guess. I mean, that's part of me.
You didn't
whatever.
Ask permission. That's part of me. Like, that's my body.
So, no, I take the jokes. The jokes, we're pretty rough at work. And
apparently.
I take the jokes pretty good. You know, everybody, they nickname me Nubby. And this
Nubby.
And shit. It's part of it. There's no sense in being upset about it.
No.
They ain't going to grow back. It's just part of me.
And thank God it wasn't a lot more than what it is.
Very close. So the guy that owned the company at the time and me were drilling the well, and my brother was off getting everything ready for the next one, so we're going to try to do two that day.
Yeah.
And he said whenever he called him, or he drove over there and said, "I chopped your brother's fingers off," he said, "come help me finish this well." So they finished the well, and they got over there, and they had to dig my meat out of the table because there's meat of my finger is stuck in the steel. And, it was pretty gruesome, but, I mean.
So that day he was a well digger. He was just digging human meat out of it.
Yeah, he was. He was a human digger. He was a grave digger. But, no, it's been adaptation, but I twisted it, and, I always tell everybody don't trust a well driller who has all his fingers.
Because he's not doing his job right.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I'm married to it now. I don't have much of a choice.
I don't think you have any choice at all.
Yeah. I mean, this is part of me.
Maybe if you went to Germany when they cut him off. But, so you can say then that well digging, or well drilling, my bad.
Get it right. It's part of me.
It's a pretty there's hazards there. There's risks when you're doing that job.
It's a very the new companies making the rigs and everything, they've take leaps and bounds to try to make it safer, but
at the end of the day, you're still doing a dangerous job. Exactly. And you can only do so much, especially when you have humans that are working it.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, and there's places where you can make it to where the rig does it itself and you don't have minimal human interaction. Uh-huh. But
so when it comes to oil drilling, have you ever been involved in that at all? No, you're good, man.
No.
Oil drilling at all?
No. I would say no, I've never been involved in oil drilling.
Is it the same process?
It's the same process, just a heck of a lot shallower.
Heck of a lot shallower. I thought it would be deeper.
No, oil drilling's like 1,000 feet or better.
So what's the typical well?
I say on average, the average well depth in this area is probably around 60 to 80 feet.
Because we have that aquifer below us, right?
Exactly.
Here in Kansas, at least.
Yes, sir. Yep.
And that's kind of cool.
And where we're at in Kansas. Because you go to western Kansas, and that aquifer out there, they've done research on that aquifer, and it's so old and deep. They've carbon dated the water, and it's over 500 to 1 million years old.
You're kidding me.
It's old.
Damn.
That water level out there in Garden City area, it just keeps dropping. They got to keep drilling deeper wells. And no matter how much rain they get, it doesn't shoot back up and refill. But around here, when we had that drought a few years ago and the water table was dropping, and I could tell as soon as we got that rain, everybody forgot about it because the water table shot back up. We have plenty of water all of a sudden.
Is there ever a risk of us running that thing dry?
There's always the risk. It's a natural resource. You could almost say it'll never go dry, but you can't guarantee it.
And just below us specifically, we have that aquifer, right? Mm-hmm. Is that like a cave under there? What is that?
No, it's basically think of like a sandbox.
Uh-huh.
And then you put 20 feet of dirt on top of it.
And the water's just there, and it's just dirt on top of that.
Exactly.
So there's no hollow open areas down there.
You get over by Hillside in Wichita, and it becomes shale, the shale rock, and that's kind of the same.
Kind of like
that's where the caves come in.
Oh, okay.
You'll be drilling down, and all of a sudden you'll hit a fracture is what we call it, and there's basically a crack in the ground where the water's at. It kind of like an earthquake almost, I guess would be the best way to put it. And that's where the water comes from. But over here where we're at, it's like a beach. Because over way before our time, we were never even here. This where we're at here in Kansas used to be an inland beach. It used to be an inland ocean.
So that's where all the sand comes into play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Over when the dinosaurs were here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sand drilling and rock drilling?
Yes, sir.
So most of your wells, what are you doing? Are you drilling through rock or sand?
Well, it varies because it just depends on where we go. We go from McPherson into Oklahoma, like I said, and then from Pratt clear to Andover. And once you get to Hillside, it gets into the shale, the rock. But where we're at now is sand. But you go towards Goddard, you'll get, and where we're at now, we could go over 140 feet and not hit rock. Over 200 feet and not hit rock. But you go over towards Goddard at about 40, 50 feet, you'll hit shale.
And then what?
And then you got to keep going into the shale to get the water.
Is it a different process, though, or do you just keep drilling until it gets through? Drilling.
You just got to watch the cuttings that come out of the hole as you drill to understand if there's water there, where the water's coming from. It's very
strange.
It is. It's something not a lot of people know about, and no one ever I see it all day long. It's boring. Not boring to me, but boring to me. But, you know, if you had me come drill a well at your house, you'd be in amazement as how it goes.
How it all happens?
I mean, about every day when I drill a well, I defeat the laws of gravity.
I mean, how so?
I drill an 11-inch hole 80 feet down into the ground and pull all my rods out of there, all the bit and everything, and then I put casing in back in that borehole is what we call it. And I put 80 feet of casing in there. I don't lose any footage because there's water down in there that's flowing, but it's not collapsing the borehole because of the additives I use in my drilling fluid, the head pressure with hydrology, how it works. I'm able to keep that borehole open and not collapse.
There's a lot going on here that I don't understand.
There is a very lot.
What do you mean the fluids that you use?
So
what do you mean? Like, when you talk about the fluids and the hydrology and the blah, 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 blah.
When I drill a well, we'll back the rig into the place where we picked, and we'll stand the rig up, put the bit on, drill down, and start adding on rods as we go to the depth that was determined, judging on the formation. When I drill, I got a pump on the truck that's moving, a centrifugal that's moving the water, and it's flowing from my pit, which is what holds all my water and my cuttings, up through the rig, down back through the rods, and gets blasted out of the bit, pressurized, and carries all of my cuttings back up that 11-inch hole.
Oh, okay.
To ground level.
So that's where all the shit's coming out of that's getting cut up down there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got you. So you're using the water itself as you're drilling to get everything out.
To carry everything out.
Exactly. Is the water flowing that's under the ground that you guys drill into?
It is.
Or is it just stagnant?
It's flowing.
It's flowing.
Yep.
That's weird. So it's like an underground river or lake type
that's
thing.
That's the best way to put
with
it.
With no air.
It's an underground river.
It's an underground river.
And you're just tapping
it. And that's Arkansas to folks in Arkansas.
Yes, Arkansas. Not Arkansas, Arkansas.
It's Arkansas. When you guys are drilling, then do you determine? Will you like scope out a place and say there's probably rock down here or there's probably sand? How does that all happen?
We can tell. There's a website that KU and the KDHE has combined together, and every well I drilled has what we call a lithological log, and it's down to the footage as to what I saw. Like, for example, 0 to 3 topsoil. 3 to 25 brown clay, 25 to 30 fine sand, 30 to 40, 50 whatever medium sand, and that's the end of my log because that's where I stopped, say 60 feet. So you can go to that website and pull up all that information for the logs in the area, and there's thousands and thousands of logs. I mean, you can't drive a block in Wichita or anywhere without seeing a piece of a pipe coming out of the ground.
Oh, really?
Where everybody gets their water.
Nobody just looks at that stuff. Nobody drives by and notices it.
Nobody pays attention.
I mean, I haven't. Exactly. That's all news to me.
Yeah. As long as the water works at your house and your grass is green, nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for well drillers.
It's a thankless deal.
So, like, Cheney Lake. Mm-hmm. We'll touch on that, too. Like, Wichita gets all their water from Cheney Lake.
Most of their water.
Out there, they have this shit called Red Jaw.
Yep.
Nasty red clay.
There's shale.
Shale?
Shale.
Is that what it's called?
It's shale. Red Jaw is shale.
Red Jaw is shale?
It's the same stuff they use on ball diamonds.
Oh, okay. So I was thinking you were talking about a rock, actually, but that stuff is...
In eastern Wichita, it's a rock. It's hard. As I drill, I have the ability to put pressure on my bit as I drill, and I'll put 400 PSI on that bit as I'm drilling through the rock, and it's just creeping along just barely. For instance, this year... we drilled an 80-foot well down by Udall, and I had that 400 PSI, and it took me 4 hours to go 80 feet.
And that's a lot?
Typically, in 80 feet, I can do an hour.
Oh, okay. So you're talking like four times as long.
Exactly. It varies where you go, how hard the rock is, what the formation is. I mean, I can drill a well in this backyard, and it could be completely different to the one just right next door, even if they're 20 feet apart.
No shit. 10 feet apart. That's crazy.
It's amazing. That's part of what I love about what I do.
Is it's always different.
It's always different. There's a challenge. You got to pay attention to what's going on. You got to pay attention to what everybody's doing and be ready for the next step. And
Make sure your fingers are intact.
Yeah. Make sure no one's gonna get hurt. when I pull up on the job site, that's my job site, and it's my job to make sure that everybody stays safe, no one gets hurt, and I do the best job I can.
That's cool though, because a lot of jobs, people out there that I've talked to, a lot, what they hate the most is that it's repetitive, you know. Uh-huh. And that's one cool aspect of your job is that you're kind of dealing with something new all the time, so it's. Mm-hmm. And it's you're dealing with Mother Nature. You're dealing with the Earth, right?
It's always a challenge. So I'm always fighting her.
And you're always thinking about how can I do this better? How can I do that? You know,
quicker.
Yeah,
on
quicker.
To the next one, the best job I can.
That red jaw stuff. The what'd you call it again?
Red jaw. Yeah.
Yeah, it's red jaw. But what was the
shale.
Term you used? The shale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, the buddy over there is switching cameras for me right now. He he just walked out, but he was stuck at Cheney Lake one time with his truck, and he's like, "Hey, come pull me out!" And he was stuck in that red jaw, and that stuff is nasty, man.
It is. It's up at the top.
It gets packed into your tires, and it doesn't matter if you have the best tires in the world.
I used to duck hunt a lot at Cheney, so I know it's nasty.
So, Wichita gets their water from Cheney Lake. You said sort of. Mm-hmm. Describe that.
Most of the water that everybody in Wichita gets their water from comes from up by Halstead. Bentley, that kind of area.
So it's not from Cheney Lake?
Partial. I don't know the numbers for sure, but I'd probably ballpark 75% comes from up there and 25% comes from Cheney. That's why during that drought years ago, Cheney Lake was so dry. It was because Wichita was pumping more out of Cheney, a little bit more than they do up north, because they were drawing the water table down. When we do work, see what we do, we drill wells for not only your lawn, for your house, for your livestock, your solar system, your cattle. We also do the wells and all the service that goes with it for the center pivots for the farmers. And so when we go pull those pumps, those great big turbines, 8-inch pipe and line shafts and everything, we see a lot of, you can tell, it's about like reading a book. On that column pipe, there's a rust line where the static water level is. So if we dug a hole 10 feet down and we hit water, the static water level's at 10 feet. Up there, during the drought, we could see that static water level was at 10 feet. You could see the rust mark there. But whenever you keep pulling the pipe, you could see another 20, 30 feet down deeper where the water level was actually at.
Mm.
Because the water level had sucked down and dropped down in that aquifer.
Yeah.
And not just the, like you said, the river underneath us, there's different levels to it too. There's 20, 30 feet here, 40 feet there of sand where the water is. And then you hit a little 10, 20 foot clay layer or even a foot clay layer and you go into a different aquifer is what they call it.
So it's like a sandbar almost in a river that you're digging through again and then you're in a new body of water.
Exactly. And you go down deep enough and you reach this real pretty white sand and they call it the Equus beds. And that's where the inland ocean years ago was.
No shit. You guys ever find fossils and stuff then when you're digging down there?
I've got a clam at my house about that big.
An ocean clam. Could have come from salt water.
Exactly.
Really?
At my house, full intact. I've got petrified bones. I've got petrified wood. I've got all kinds
that's
of stuff.
Insane, that's insane, man. That's so crazy. Cool, though, to think about.
It is.
Here in, like, the heart of Kansas, where we're considered the breadbasket,
uh-huh.
We were here with the ocean at some point.
Exactly.
There were ocean animals around here.
I mean, up north of here at Bentley, they still, the sand pits up there, they would have the megalodon.
Mammoth?
No, the Megalodon.
Mastodon.
The one that swam the ocean was real big. Oh. They would find, well, shark teeth.
They would find shark teeth up there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
As they're digging those sand pits.
That is so cool, dude.
And it's something I never knew about until I got into this.
So you got into that job and you're seeing that shit.
Yeah, and I see stuff.
Because you're digging through years and years.
Exactly.
Hundreds and thousands of years.
I'm seeing sand that nobody has ever seen in
hasn't seen the light of day.
Hundreds of million years. Yep. And as soon as I put that casing in there and do everything, no one's going to see that again, ever.
So you sit there sometimes and you look at that sand, you're like, wow, like hasn't seen the light of day
exactly.
in hundreds of millions of years, potentially.
Yeah, it's part of the enjoyment I get out about it.
Do you remember a few years ago, well, I say a few, it was probably like 10 or 15 now, they found a mammoth that was buried in Wichita when they were drilling. I don't know if they were doing what you do, but they were
doing the Highway 400,
yeah.
Yep.
And they found a whole mammoth in there. And they, you know, I remember being in the exploration place in Wichita, and they had the teeth on display.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just molars from a mammoth. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
Yeah,
it's stuff you don't think about. Just walking around, you don't.
Just walking around your grassland out here.
Yep. Yeah,
nobody thinks of that stuff.
It was here long before you and I ever knew what happened.
So. Right.
It's so cool stuff.
So there are caves in Kansas.
There are. Actually, so part of what we do, we have to be certified for what we do. And it's you got to pass the test to become KDHE certified for drilling wells.
What does that stand for?
The Kansas Department of Health and Environment.
Okay.
And you have to be a licensed water well contractor. And to do any work on wells, basically drill them or even change the pump. And so every year we have to have an X amount of continue education hours.
Mm-hmm.
And there's four opportunities a year to get that. And I'm on the board for the Kansas Groundwater Association.
Oh, nice.
And I go to just about everyone just because it's part of my duties. And the last one they had was up at Hayes, Fort Hayes State University. And there was some real good classes on everything about drilling to the geology of Kansas. And they actually said there's caves down by Medicine Lodge area. And the guy that did the seminar, he talked about there's caves that you're crawling on your belly, just barely getting through there, to caves that he could stand up in.
Really?
And he said the valleys, if you've ever been down there, the valleys down there, he said the theory is those valleys are actually caves that used to be there that just collapsed is all it is.
Wow.
And
That's how it made.
I never knew that. That's
so it's not like being in Colorado where you see the mountains and that was pushed because of
the plates. Earthquakes or whatever.
Yeah.
No, they say these are just caves. There's a certain soil types where they meet and the water gets in there and just keeps eating it out and just causes those caves. And
wow.
Over time, it gets too big and collapses. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Is very cool.
I never knew that.
No, I don't think anybody knows that.
No, yeah.
Because I've always wondered, you know, I've been to caves in Missouri and Colorado and stuff, mm-hmm. but I've always wondered, I wonder if there's any caves down here that we don't know about, especially with the aquifer that we have that everybody talks about.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, and that's what I enjoy so much is everything changes job site to job site, whether it's sand or shale and even in the aquifers you fight contaminants.
Mm-hmm.
As I drill, there's certain times where you can tell by the sand that's coming out of the hole that we talked about if it's a real red, deep red, like an iron color, and that's why Edgewater, which is like 45th and Ridge, and everywhere along Ridge Road there's red colored driveways. That's from the sprinkler system running and it's drawing that iron water and it's staining the concrete. Mm. And we can go below that and isolate that, and there's
so it's not good to have iron in your water.
I mean, everybody's got it.
Yeah,
everybody's got it. It's just how you can contain it and prevent it. It's crazy what we can do there, but like where most of the city of Wichita gets their water up by Halstead, for instance, we pull the pumps that run the pivots, and it's just big pipe and it's labor intensive and it's all hands on. And we pull the pipe out of the ground, and it's got, I promise you, Jesse, it's got half inch to an inch worth of what we call baby clay.
Baby clay?
Baby. Baby cup. Baby.
Baby shit?
Baby shit colored.
Oh, I got you.
Bacteria built up on it. And that's just the groundwater.
That's appetizing.
Up there has that. And that's where everybody gets their
that's
water.
That's where they drink out of.
Yeah, yeah. And no one knows that. I never. It's just
it's probably better that they don't know that.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It is nasty. Nasty, nasty.
But it's safe to drink still, probably?
They treat it.
They treat it, yeah. So it's just the you're with the groundwater thing that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys determine if water's safe to drink that you come across and whatnot? That's, or
our responsibilities is to basically steer the groundwater association. So every well driller in Kansas is licensed, and we're responsible for looking out for all of them, making sure there's not any legislation that's going to hose us that they don't know about, or what we can do to stand up for them. And in charge of setting up all the seminars for the continuing education and protecting the groundwater that's down there.
Let's get into some controversial subjects. You want to?
Okay. I'm ready for it.
How do you feel about fluoride in water?
I can't say anything about it. I mean,
you can't?
All I can say is I grew up on well water. I came out with
a few ticks. Yeah.
But I can always taste the difference between pure groundwater, well water,
and city water.
City water, Dasani, Aquafina, all that stuff. I feel like I can tell the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, there's it's water. You shouldn't have to mess with it. You shouldn't have to add all this stuff into it.
I don't know. I agree, especially if you're getting clean groundwater, which is what we have basically, right? Mm-hmm. In Kansas. Mm-hmm. And I can tell the difference too. My parents live in the country, you know, and I've grown up on well water my whole life. And I can definitely tell when I'm in the city that it has a chemically taste to it almost, mm-hmm. you know? Something's different.
It does.
And I prefer well water. Maybe it's because I grew up on it. But
yep.
So, like well water in Kansas, we have farmers all around us.
Mm-hmm.
Fields, people spraying for all sorts of stuff, pesticides, insecticides. Mm-hmm. Does any of that ever leak into the groundwater that you can see?
It does.
Really?
If you're not careful when you're drilling wells and don't grout, what we call grouting it properly.
What do you mean by grouting it?
So there's a special...
Let's pour some more whiskey.
Oh.
Let's pour some more whiskey.
If you're not careful when you're grouting the well is what we call it, which is a special type of clay, basically, that's mined in Wyoming. And the best way I tell everybody that asks me what it is it's astronaut food clay. It's freeze-dried is the best way to describe it.
Is it?
And as soon as it hits the water, it starts hydrating, swelling.
Yeah.
And you use that to seal off to where if I drilled a well, you could change your motor oil and drop it all on the ground, make a big old mess right there, right by where I drilled, and it will not get down into the groundwater. And if you're not careful and do a good job at grouting it, which is part of what we do, is protecting the groundwater that's down there, you'll contaminate that aquifer. And all those contaminants, once they get down in there, there's nothing you can do.
It's just there.
It's there. And it just grows. And there's parts, and that's part of what I'm passionate about, why I got on the groundwater board, is if you contaminate that groundwater, if you meddle with it in any way and change and introduce foreign bacteria, all this stuff, and it gets in there, it's there for good. You, no matter what you try to do, you cannot get rid of it.
It cannot mitigate it. It never gets depleted, and it's just gone.
You cannot dilute it down. It just keeps pluming.
Even from motor oil?
Motor oil, the biggest thing is saltwater oil drilling. Like down by Schulte, you know where that's at?
Yeah.
South Wichita? There's a saltwater plume down there, and even the oxychemical plant down there, they had a big spill years and years ago, and that's why there's not much irrigation down there, not much house wells, is because they spilled chemicals that got into the aquifer that contaminated it, and that plume is still
there. Did they own up to it at least?
No.
No, of course not.
You cover it up.
Yeah, you just
it's a government
sweep
deal.
Some dirt over top.
It's a government deal. Just keep covering it up.
Yeah, we'll just keep covering it up.
But
that's interesting because my dad said back in the 70s and shit, and even before then, like the 60s, 50s, when you change your oil, you would just dump that in the grass.
Yeah.
Or you dump it on the fence line and kill the weeds, right?
And that's, you know.
Is that safe to do?
That's. I'm not going to say it's safe because it's not my responsibility to.
But there's a reason it's they probably stopped doing that,
it's
right?
It's fairly safe because typically you've got enough soil there to filter out all the shit before it gets to the water level. But if you're dumping it straight down a hole right into the sand, right into the aquifer, it's there. And once that water is contaminated, it's done. And once all the water in this area gets contaminated or depleted,
then what?
It's done. There's nothing you can do. It kind of terrifies me at times.
Does it?
I mean, there's...
That's terrifying me right now.
Good. I'm glad I scared you.
What do you do at that point? Can you use a reservoir like Cheney Lake?
I mean, that's all you can do is pray for rain or the lakes. That's it.
That's freaky shit.
It is.
Because I feel like, you know, the best source of water we have is those aquifers.
Yeah, and that's why I'm passionate about protecting them, preserving it for the future.
I love it. I think it's great. Seriously, I love it, man.
I
had a
crazy
crop consultant on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he
Jesse.
Talked about the soil.
Yep.
And that's Alan Vinjohn. Shout out Alan Vinjohn.
Oh, yeah.
He talked about the soil, and I was mind-blown. I was like, I never knew that played such a big part in just the earth as a whole and making everything work together still and not depleting us.
It's a delicate balance.
It is.
And you can't
it really
go,
is, man.
You can't go messing it up.
I need to quit pissing out so much iron.
Yeah.
I eat too much
you're
steak.
You're part of the problem. No, beef is good. Beef
is
beef.
Good. Eat beef.
Yes.
But I don't want us to look like Mars at some point where we're just a red planet.
Well, if we keep meddling in things we shouldn't, it might end up like that.
Do you ever just feel like, though, maybe we should just, like, let's have a party and just deplete all the resources and our grandkids can deal with that shit?
No. Live now. Have the consequences.
Yeah, like, let's just burn through all the resources and have a blast.
Well, let's drive our oil trucks, and I guess I'm one to talk, but...
So what's the biggest problem right now that you see with our water?
Everybody takes it for granted. Everybody assumes it'll always be there. Everybody assumes everything will be fine, hunky-dory. You kind of caught a glimpse of it during the drought. When the water level dropped and everybody was kind of, oh shit, what are we going to do when it runs out? And then the good times came and the rain came and everything filled back up and they forgot about it. That's the biggest problem I see is people.
So really just awareness. People need to understand that this is a finite resource and if you don't take care of it.
That's a big word.
I know. I'm learning big words, man.
I'm impressed.
That's the reason I do this podcast, to learn big words.
Yeah, it's exactly like you said. It's a finite resource. It's something everybody's got to be mindful of. I mean, you know, shut off your sink when you're brushing your teeth and you don't need it. Or my biggest pet peeve is when it's raining and I see sprinkler systems running.
Oh, yeah.
It's the biggest waste of water. Everybody thinks it'll be there, but it won't.
Well, everybody's under the impression that it just goes back into the earth, right? If you run a faucet all day and dump it in the ground, it goes back to the aquifer.
Yeah. As long which as some of it does, right? House, they don't care.
If I dump a bucket of water on the ground, is it going back to the aquifer?
It will. It'll take time.
Yeah.
But it will. But the only other biggest thing I see that I think is the biggest waste of water is fescue yards. That everybody wants that nice green grass and look like a golf course, but that takes water, chemicals, and it's just depleting everything. And I'm guilty of it. I mean, when I got my house, it had a fescue yard, and it looks great.
Of course it
I
does.
I like it. But
everybody also wants a veal steak on their plate every single night.
Yeah.
You got to kill a lot of baby cows for that.
And that's the biggest thing I see is it's the grass that wasn't meant to be here, and we brought it here. And there you can have it and it's okay. Just you don't need to. What happens is people build these houses and we drill the well and the sprinkler system and the sod and all this stuff, and the sprinkler guys set the sprinkler system for a sod, and that's it. That's it for years. It's watering three times a day. At my house, I run my sprinkler system probably four times a week for maybe 10 minutes, and it looks great. You don't need to water it that much. You gotta, and maybe it's because I know what I know coming from the groundwater. You just got to be careful with the stuff.
There might be some landscapers out there right now listening going, no.
Yeah.
No.
I'm sure I'll be chastised.
But that's why you got to go with buffalo grass, man. That's what I have.
Exactly.
You don't have to do anything.
It's a native grass.
And you don't have to mow it every 2 weeks.
Exactly. It's a native grass. You don't have to do anything with it.
You don't have to do anything.
Yep.
It's a beautiful thing.
And that's, you know, I everybody wants the green lawn. And that's gravy money to me. I'll go punch a hole in your yard and
just get turf, pussy.
Yeah, well,
go drop $20,000 and get a turf lawn, and then you don't have to worry about it ever again.
I mean, or Bermuda or Buffalo, you know, stuff like that. That's native.
Yeah, sure. Or do what all the hippies are doing now. Which, shout out to all the hippies because I respect it. Let your yard go crazy.
Yeah.
Let the bees come and eat all there the flowers and all the clover out and just let it go. The city might not be a fan of it, but you're helping out nature.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One bee at a time.
All right. So do you have anything that you want to say, like, to people that want to get into your occupation? If you want to be a well driller, if you want to drill wells for a living or be on the board with the water treatment?
Not too much. I mean,
it's not
a, it's an unknown. It's not really a known industry. And find someone to get your feet wet. Now, it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to be out there drilling wells when it's 20 degrees, 10 degrees, or 110 or 20 degrees. It's very hard, physically demanding labor.
Can you make a good living off of it?
You can.
Yeah?
You can. I mean, I do, but I had to work.
You also own a company.
I had to work to where I'm good at.
But for people that want to step into your occupation, there's a chance for them to be well off.
There is. If you work hard and get involved and pay and or just care.
Just care about what you do.
It's a very old industry. Not a lot of people know about it. It's a dying industry, too. I'm probably one of the youngest people in Kansas that do what I do.
There's a lot of industries out there like that that are dying because people in the millennial generation, myself included, are not involved in those.
Everybody wants to sit here with headphones and a microphone. And
everybody, yeah. What a bunch of idiots.
Yeah. But, everybody wants to do the office gig or go to school for 4 years to college and everything, but not just my industry, plumbing, electrical, all these trade industries, nobody really understands it. Everybody goes to high school and thinks, well, I got to go to college now.
That's what's funny about your job, though, and jobs like yours, is that people don't understand it and don't care, but they also use it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Without your job, their daily life is not going, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to have water. Everybody needs a well. Or at least the city that they live in needs a well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yet people don't really understand or care about it. They're just like, oh, yeah, that's you can get water. You just turn on the faucet. Yeah, there's nothing to it.
Yep, as long as it works.
It works.
Everybody needs to pay more attention to the trade schools.
Mm-hmm.
Look at those. I mean, there's people that go to college and end up in debt, and there's people that graduate high school and go to the trade schools and aren't in debt.
Make a great living out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like the guy running the deal over there. Oh, he's gone now, but...
Well, even him, though, that's Jordan Klaus over there running the cameras right now, and he knows landscaping for a living.
He knows what I'm talking about.
That's why
about.
I'm saying he might talk shit on you after this for the sprinkler thing.
To hell with that guy.
He agrees with you. Well, and you stop watering your yard.
I'm right sometimes.
You know, to me, you're right the whole time, because I don't know anything about it.
It's the trade school. People need to kind of open their eyes to the opportunities there before they're completely gone, and you can't.
It's something crazy is going to happen, I feel like, with all the trades like that. Everybody, like you said, plumbing, electrical, everything.
Everybody I see on job sites, they're old, not a lot of young people.
Yeah.
And that's the same with the water well industry. It's all old people.
But, you know, that also might show people that, hey, there's a big need for these jobs right now, and maybe there'll be a job boom one day because everybody will wake up and be like, wow, I can make a lot of money doing plumbing.
Yeah.
Or I can make a lot of money doing well drilling, you know?
And we see it with the way the market is right now with everything crazy going on for the last year and a half. We see it.
Yeah.
All the prices on our supplies increase, decrease, mostly increase with everything going on. And it's a crazy world to be in right now.
It is.
And with the trade industry dying, it's not a good thing.
No, I would agree with that. But if there's any silver lining, hopefully people wake up and realize, wow, there's great opportunities out there, and I didn't have to go get a useless degree to make a good living. You know, I could have done it right here because this is a need. Everybody needs plumbing. Everybody needs water.
But what will it take for people to realize that, Jesse?
Maybe it's you just talking right now, you know? Maybe it's your podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's your podcast, not mine.
This is why I love doing this job, is because I can talk to everybody.
So how did you get into this? Why do you like doing what you do?
I love doing this because of that very reason, because there's all sorts of jobs out there, including well drilling, that I have no idea about. I never knew about that. I don't know what a lot of people do all day long. And I've always thought about doing a podcast, and I drink with a lot of people at the bar. And every now and then I'll get on a conversation and I'll talk to somebody for 2 hours about what they do for a living and how they got there. So I'm like, why not just do that?
Yeah.
And, you know, you get some equipment around, you get a table like this and a few drinks. And
an old Pizza Hut booth.
There's nothing to it. And it's important. It's super important, I think, for people to hear people like you talk about all the stuff that you do, because where else are they going to hear about this? Where else are they going to hear about the groundwater and the quality of the groundwater and how you guys drill wells? And the potential issues with depleting all the water supply. I mean, who else are they going to hear that from? It's people like you that are doing a job like that. And that's super important, and it's super interesting as well. And I hope people feel the same way. And that's why I did this podcast, because it's like, wow, there's so many jobs out there like that that nobody knows about, myself included. And let's just talk and bullshit about it, you know?
Yeah, it's you know, you're opening everybody's eyes to all the other stuff, like the veterinary, like the clown, the magician. Like the firefighter, like the rapper. You know?
Yeah, it's all cool stuff, man.
Yeah.
It's all fun stuff to hear about, and I enjoy it, and here we are.
Yeah.
Well, cheers to you, brother.
Yeah.
I think you're doing a cool thing, and I hope that you save our water supply.
We'll do the best we can.
You know, I hope you do. Do you have any social media or anything that you want to shout out, like any handles that you have or where people can find you guys, or any business cards? Or
I got my business cards, and that's it.
What's your business called?
Premier Pump and Well Service. We're based in Mays.
Based in Mays. Mm-hmm. And people can use you guys for anything as far as home wells or...
We do everything from...
Geothermal?
Yes. From house wells to lawn wells to livestock solar wells to working for the farmers on the pivots. And the solar company I'm involved with, I didn't get a touch on that.
Yeah.
They're a very good company. They are very good at what they do. And
is solar technology the future with wells?
I think it's a vague line, but I think so. The company I was involved with, I'm involved with now, I didn't know that technology is out there. There's technology that you could run your sprinkler system on a solar
setup. Solar well.
Their technology also is to the point of you can have a communicator, they call it, where you pay for a cell phone reception for this box on your solar pump out in, you know, the Flint Hills, and you can log into that anywhere in the world, and it'll tell you how much water it's pumping that day.
That's cool.
How it's working.
Yeah. That's cool.
It's solar is the future. I mean, not to sound green, it is kind of a...
It's okay to be green.
it's a renewable resource. I mean,
yeah. I'm all about it, man. I'm all for that stuff.
I'm pretty impressed with the solar stuff that's possible these days. And I see the line power side of it too, and the stuff they can do. Everybody's gearing towards the more efficiency, more efficient stuff. How can we do it better? And so
and also the fact that a lot of people probably think, well, what if shit just hits the fan? How am I going to get my water and stuff?
Yep.
You have a solar well, you're good, right?
Yeah, or a pitcher pump.
Or a pitcher pump.
Like the old school.
An old school.
Little House on the Prairie. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Or a windmill.
Yeah, or windmills. Yeah. Windmills take a little bit more upkeep than solar pumps, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's
I'm for it, man. Let's do it.
The way to start going.
That's at least there's something that we can look forward to a little bit, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool, man. Thanks, Jared, for coming on, brother. I had a blast on this one. Let's drink these whiskey Red Bulls and call it a day.
Okay, sounds good.
Cheers, man.